Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. Today, Mercator Advisor Group's own Don Apgar, Director of Merchant Services Practice, discusses HeelPay with HeelPay co-founder Lance Carlson. HeelPay is an interesting fintech in that they work across a wide range of industries in a bill pay and sort of debt collection facilitator role. They don't actually collect debts themselves, but they help merchants collect their own debts. The conversation covers trends, misconceptions, merchant aggregation, and settles on an interesting partnership with a fellow fintech called Spreedly, who specialize in orchestrating payments across varied merchant configurations. Without further ado, let's go to the show. So Lance, HeelPay is working in seemingly like a number of unrelated industries. I'm curious sort of what the through line is that and the sort of like what business pain points you're solving for your customers or that they're facing and how you guys respond.
Yeah, HeelPay, we do bill pay generally. That's, you know, a pain in the butt on both sides for both merchants and for consumers. So there's a lot I could say about that. But in general, the pain point is bill pay and getting your bills paid on time and understanding late payments and all that jazz. It's a lot.
Yeah, that's that affects a number of industries, right? So I could see the common thread in the industries that you're in.
Yeah, yes. So a lot of the industries we're in, we do landlord payments, we do invoice payments, and we have several religious and charitable organizations. But our biggest bread and butter is actually in the collection space, which is for the uninitiated bills that are usually typically late. And maybe people are more familiar with the concept debt collection. It gets a bad rap, but it's actually there are very few bad actors and there's a lot of regulations and people don't understand that it's, you know, there was just a few people that may make the whole industry look bad. But yeah.
So, well, there is a fine line between billing and collection. So does your technology really help companies bill or do you really step in after, say, the 60 or 90 day mark when people have been billed but haven't paid yet?
Right. Yes. So that's the great distinction. For most of the industries we work with, we actually do some amount of the handling of the bills we get for rent payments, for religious organizations, invoices, that sort of thing. But with the collection space, we actually sit at the later stages of the bill when it's late and it's already been either charged off by, let's say, a hospital or a credit card company or something like that. So, yeah, our most innovative products are in the later phases of a bill.
So we mentioned that, you know, like generally speaking, like, I don't know, like there's some bad raps in the debt collection world. Naturally, HeelPay doesn't have a bad rap, or you would not be on the Payments Journal podcast. But sure. I am wondering what makes you guys different. How are you working with merchants that's more helpful for them? How are you putting up your differentiators?
Yeah, so we work with a lot of collection law firms or attorneys. We rigorously vet our merchants and make sure that they themselves haven't had any bad raps against them, their rap sheet. It's all about reputation in this business. And there have been some exposés in some notable journals about very bad acting practices. And luckily things are modernizing, and I hopefully can take some credit for that as a company, as we are modernizing data, you know, collection to our systems and back and forth. But a lot of the bad things that happened are related to technology. A good example is that, you know, back in the day, people would transfer, they would give each other USB drives with an Excel spreadsheet of the account balances and whatnot. And they would, that's how they would sell some of this, you know, these accounts to another party. And it's really crazy how that was the industry at the time and how we've been able to transform the industry into what it is today, which is more modern. There is still a lot of antiquated technology in the space, and that's where we're really shining, and we're helping automate a lot of these processes. One of the major ways we're doing that is by having a product, our mainstay product, which is a payment portal. It's a consumer-facing technology. So basically, you just imagine a bill pay portal, but it has some very specific and advanced features for the collection space in general. And so, yeah, being able to provide consumers with a friendly bill pay experience at the time that we entered the market was just unheard of. And we do a lot of analytics to figure out, hey, are consumers getting stuck in the bill pay experience? We do a lot of user testing, and it's really, we're taking the, what the industry industry is for the most part, and there's still a lot of it going on where they're calling people, they're sending letters, physical letters to people to try to collect on this money. When people do not want to talk to someone over the phone to make a bill payment, they would rather from the comfort of their home or from the comfort of their cell phone or, you know, the privacy of that device, they can just make that payment. They can check their balance. They can make recurring payments. They can make recurring arrangements. We work with our customers to try to figure out, you know, what of their customers... It can be a little confusing because there's so many layers of this, but how do we customize the payment options given all the different kinds of accounts that these agencies have on their books? How do we customize the experience for the consumer so that it's the easiest and most convenient for them to pay as quickly as possible? So that's the end goal. And we actually solicit reviews from our consumers that use our system, and it's extremely positive. So we know we're going in the right direction.
I don't know. It seems kind of counterintuitive, though, Lance. I mean, I get that you guys are bringing a higher level of technology into the, you know, what was a somewhat looked down upon industry, being, you know, collecting debts and payments owed. But how does a friendlier approach to the consumer result in more collections? I mean, if I don't want to pay my bill, I don't want to pay my bill, regardless if you send me a letter or not, right? Or what am I missing?
Totally. And it's so interesting. I've been in this industry for long enough to hear from other industry experts about that exact same thing. Is it better to have a stick or a carrot? And, you know, I think that to get people to pay their bills at some point is the goal. And you can't really force people to pay their bills if they don't want to. And there are some tools for doing that. Those aren't things that we as a company do. Those are mostly things that the collection agencies that have the legal authority to do so will do, or have the ability to report on your credit report. Law firms that can also have other means for forcing people to make, you know, engagement with their bill, like tax garnishments, wage garnishments, that kind of thing. These are not things that we do. We prefer to sit in the place where if you are a consumer that, you know, most of the bills that are late are a mistake of some kind, you know, and whether it's you forgot about it or you didn't realize that you had a bill that came through late or whatever it is, most people do want to pay down their past due bills. And we're looking to make that experience easier for people rather than having to talk to somebody and make that an embarrassing experience for people. Because frankly, most people don't want to talk to somebody about their outstanding bills. You know, it's just psychologically, it's just not something people want to do.
So I see what you're saying, and that's an interesting paradigm shift, your analogy of the carrot and the stick. So it sounds like there's room for your solution to kind of slot in between current bills and the really hardcore, I'm never going to pay this past due bills. And so before the business sends it to a collection agency at, you know, 10 cents or 5 cents on the dollar, your technology can step in and kind of skim off those people who want to pay but just haven't done so for the reasons that you mentioned.
100%. And, you know, I think a lot of the people that come through our system are also in a situation where maybe they couldn't pay the full balance. And so that's also another opportunity that we take advantage of, where it's like we're slotted in the spot where the person can't make the full payment today. And our system allows them to make decisions about, can I pay this over 12 months? Can I pay this over 18 months? Can I pay this over 24 months? They have the power through our system to choose what option is going to work with their current financial status, and it helps them manage that process throughout the entire 12-month period. So if that process isn't extremely easy to follow and use, people are going to start, again, being late with their bills and not being able to make payments against it. And when I was talking about other people in the industry that have really kind of guided me on some of how to think about bills in general, it's really just, it's based on kind of your life status. If you can't pay your full amount bill today or in 3 months or whatever it is, your life circumstances change. And maybe even in 2 years, you'll be in a better financial situation or position to make that bill payment. And that's where, you know, if the systems are in place to make that easy, you're going to get people paying their bills.
So that really makes a lot of sense. So it's you taking a really holistic approach to the whole debt collection thing. So it's not as binary as it used to be, where either you're current or you're a deadbeat, right? There's room in the middle to help kind of close that gap with your technology. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're a deadbeat today, that doesn't mean you're going to be a deadbeat in 6 months, 2 years, 4 years from now, right?
So, Lance, it's easy, you know, as we discuss, you know, debt and debt collection, it's easy to focus our attention on end users. But it sort of occurs to me that your customers are, in fact, merchants themselves, which sort of makes HealPay, in a sense, like a merchant aggregator. I'm curious, how do you guys orchestrate all sorts of different payments across, you know, what are, you know, what we've described as many different industries? I'm imagining your merchant partners come in all shapes and sizes and doing all types of payments. How do you orchestrate that?
It's not easy. It's very complicated. We have a lot of partners in the background, different bank partners. You know, we have, with any fintech situation, it's never quite clear because merchants do have their existing relationships and they also want to accept different forms of payment. We accept credit card, we accept ACH bank account information, which both of those are the most basic forms of payment that we can support and do. But there's a lot of different kinds of partners in the background and we have to do a lot of legwork to make that work. And we have to do so in a way that's compliant and secure. So yeah, in order to help facilitate that merchant aggregation, one of the big tools that we use for assisting us in that, we were looking for something that was like a universal wallet or payment vault. And if for people that don't know or understand the payments industry, you have to store the credit card somewhere to be able to have a safe payment method that you can use for just one-off payments that you want to make later on, or very commonly recurring payments. But there are some regulations in place, some standards for which doing so you need to follow, like PCI compliance. And in order to be PCI compliant, there's a lot of security, a lot of hoops that you have to jump through to ensure that you're not being irresponsible with that credit card or bank, or frankly, bank information. I actually think that bank information is more commonly used in a less than secure manner, and it should be treated more like credit cards, but it's not. But we needed a payment vault, and we didn't want to store the credit cards ourselves because there's a lot of, not only is you have to build the infrastructure to warehouse those credit cards and encrypt them properly and do all kinds of things to make sure you're good, but there's also an insurance component where you have to, I mean, we already pay for data insurance, but that cyber liability insurance goes up much higher when you have to deal with, when you're storing actual credit cards. So there are payment gateways. You can integrate directly with your bank partner's gateway, but that causes issues because then you have to build a system where you're storing those credit cards at every single partner's vault. And then when your consumer who's wanting to store their credit card information on your system as a saved payment goes in and wants to make a payment, let's say at another merchant or maybe another merchant account that has different relationships with different banks that we have set up for them, they would have to resave their payment method on our system, and it's just a bad consumer experience. So Spreedly actually offers this ability whereby we can store that credit card with them. They assume the liability, and then their system can then send those credit cards and ACH information directly to our partners, our banking partners in the back. And we don't have to worry about that stuff. We still have to do our PCI compliance things as well, but it's a lot less of a burden now that we use Spreedly.
Yeah, that's really interesting the way that you've kind of laid that out, Lance. And it's, you know, thinking about where you sit in the kind of the value chain of the payments ecosystem. You know, I think that companies that sit where you are haven't been able to do what you do because of the challenges in payments, right? And I think it's the technology of orchestration platforms like Spreedly that kind of give you the technology to get the job done, if you will, because you have to make it easy for the consumer, but you also have to make it easy for the merchant, right?
Yes. Yes.
To your point, you know, if you can't integrate with the merchant's existing kind of payment flow and at the same time have that common token where the consumer can store their credentials across, you know, various merchants. And up until recently, this kind of technology hasn't been available until companies like Spreedly brought orchestration to the forefront.
It's very true. And there are also other companies that offer different ways of approaching the same problem that I don't think that, I think Spreedly really, really approached it in a good and pragmatic way being the central vault. I've seen technologies where there's like an agent that sits somewhere, and it just doesn't make any sense. And another thing that I really like about Spreedly is their API, how nice it is to work with. So it's a great product in general to work with.
That's great to know.
So Lance, one of our favorite questions to wrap up a podcast discussion revolves around what's coming next? So I'm curious for your perspective. Do you have predictions or thoughts on the future of payments or other important types of fintech trends and market shifts that you guys are seeing at HealPay?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, most people, I do see a lot of hype around crypto and blockchain. I will say that I think that some of that excitement and hype has cooled down a bit, but I think that is also a good indicator that now that stuff is considered mainstream, which is pretty cool. Whether or not those technologies really start to dominate the marketplace, we will see. But, you know, is there a problem set that's big enough that this is the only solution that we can, you know, use to solve it? Or, you know, it's really going to be about the money. are we creating a competitive enough marketplace in these alternative forms of payment that you can't really use any other kind of form of currency to facilitate these payments? Or are we just like, it's just another form of payment, you know? And granted, things can also gain adoption just because it's cool, you know, but we'll see I really like the whole DeFi concept and crypto and all that, but I'm still kind of waiting on the sidelines to see if it's going to be adopted big time. We haven't, you know, there are people that do want to pay their bills with crypto, but it's only a few. So it's not like mobile. Mobile was very transformative in the industry. Now, most people are going on their phones and visiting the website in a web experience. So you have to make sure that you shift your technology to support that. So we'll see.
I would agree with you 100%, because, you know, it's common for we who are in the payments industry, we're always looking for the next big thing. You know, what should we be ready for? What's coming down the pike? But, you know, when you look at disrupting a legacy industry like collections, you know, it's more important about what's happening today than what's happening tomorrow. We're talking about crypto, and the consumer is saying, well, why can't I just pay on my phone? You know, why do I have to re-enter my card number? And the merchant's saying, why can't you just work with the payments provider I already have? Yep. You know, so there's some really basic blocking and tackling where there's so much room for improvement, as you pointed out, you know, before we even get to crypto, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and one of those big pain points that came up recently was the pandemic. And so you can see across the board, payments companies have had to adapt to that situation. Overall, it was good for the industry, and there, you know, there was some more revenue that was earned because, you know, these payments are having to be contactless, and obviously we get to charge more for payments, you know, with their credit card that are considered more risky because they're not chipped or whatever it is. But that was more of a pain point, and as far as technology payment companies go, that's the problem set that we're trying to solve, is the real problem, like getting the consumer to be able to make painless payments.
So just as a side note, you know, speaking of the pandemic, you know, there was a lot of people that spent a lot of money because of the incentive payments and the relief payments and et cetera. And we saw big spikes from payments perspective in things like home improvements and et cetera. Did you experience any uptick in people paying their bills as a result of that influx of cash?
Yeah, actually, there was an influx of bill payments. I would say it was sort of a little short-lived, and it's still sort of normal. But, you know, I do think that there was, especially when people were getting money from the government, and some of those individuals decided that the largest amount of money that they've ever been paid in their life was going to be used to pay down bills, which is great. But that was a little bit short-lived, and I think we're just sort of back to normalcy now. I do also think there's a lot of consumers that were reticent to just pay off bills when they didn't know what the economy was going to do or what their prospects were over the, you know, pandemic. So
that's a good point, but I think it underscores your basic premise that, you know, people want to pay their bills by and large, right?
Yes.
If you make it easy for them to do so, they'll do it more frequently.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you did make a decision to pay for something and you did value that thing. So there are people that do want to extract as much value from something and pay as little as possible. But at the end of the day, not paying is also considered frowned upon, I think, by most people. And it makes you feel good to pay your bills and be on top of that. I'm kind of the bill pay person in the family. So I feel good about being on time with all my bills and, you know, looking at my credit score and trying to optimize that. And Another trend I'm seeing is a lot of this kind of Affirm style split payments. It's really starting to take off. It's not something, you know, it's funny, we've been doing payment arrangements for people since the beginning, but as far as now, e-commerce is really adopting that. So that's kind of something we're looking at as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that you look at a buy now, pay later payment option in a scenario where people have already bought and not paid.
Totally. So yes.
It's like, how much later do you want to go?
Exactly. It increases your buying power, right? I mean, if you don't have, even if you do have the money to acquire that thing straight up right now, it's still, if you pay the full amount, you lose out on that opportunity that, you know, being able to use that money for something else, even if it's 4 months, right? I mean, some people are, maybe that money could be used to buy books or whatever it is you need to do with your life or go to college or whatever it is. There's something about spreading out that money that really, it does provide value.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that. You know, we joke a little bit about offering installments to people who are already delinquent. But, you know, in the healthcare space, a lot of providers are finding, you know, from a revenue management perspective, that one of the big obstacles is that, you know, you send Ryan a bill for $1,000 and he doesn't pay it because he doesn't have $1,000, you know. Yes. But if you come back at him and say, listen, you know, we'll meet you halfway. Let's make the bill $600 and we'll let you pay it in $450 installments. Right. And then Ryan says, well, you know, I can do that, you know.
Yes.
So it's a little bit of the same logic. So it's not, I mean, it's funny as it sounds, it's not totally out of bounds.
You have to treat people like humans. I mean, people, they get paid a salary typically, and it's paid, you know, every 2 weeks or every month or something like that, unless you're a contractor. But for the most part, people don't get paid, you know, in these big chunks. So to, right, you know, to assume that someone could just pay $1,000 for something is quite the ask. So being able to work with somebody and say, you know, even I remember being in, you know, really young and learning about consumer finance and realizing that, like, seeing the price tag on some things and seeing other people, you know, having those things that were expensive and kind of like trying to figure out how is that even possible. And then when you understand consumer finance, you realize that, yeah, I mean, this is how it's done. Real estate's a huge example. So I think it's great.